wish I'd held on to her membership number so I could just give her a weekly check-in call and send her flowers every now and then.
Now, I stupidly said to her, what's the point? It's going to do the same thing. And that aggravated the beast.
You're like, that's it. I'm leaving. I quit. I'm out of here.
You're listening to All the Best, and I'm Pip Rasmussen. It's election time in Australia, which means in the last few weeks, you might have received a phone call from a stranger asking about your precious vote. It's an old tactic used by polling analysts, independent campaign groups, donor collectors, and political parties to reach the people. It's a chance to talk one-on-one about an issue, but also a way to catch voters off guard while they're at home. To a lot of people, these phone calls are a pain. They're an unwanted conversation with a stranger. Personally, I don't think these ones are so bad, though. They're not as invasive as a telemarketer, or as frustrating as the long wait on a customer service line. Sometimes, it's in these moments that we forget our usual manners, and our temper gets the better of us. But imagine the person sitting on the other end of the line. Because to them, this phone call is a totally different experience. Just a heads up, this story contains mentions of suicide.
Hey.
Hey. Are you on lunch?
No, I'm just taking a break. I just took kind of a bad one.
Oh, really?
You know, it wasn't even the call. It was the reset. You know what I mean? Like, bad call, terrible situation, you can't help them, customer hangs up, horrible feeling in your stomach.
Yeah, sure.
And then a call comes in 5 seconds later, and you say,
hello, you're speaking with May. How can I help you today?
I've worked in call centres for 10 years, and here's what I know. If you're calling call centres, it's very unlikely that you're happy. First off, you got a problem that needs to be solved. Then you got to find the time, find the number, press option one, option three again, you're on hold. It's a breeding ground for anger, irritation, and misery. And a lot of the time, you're going to take all of that out on whoever answers the phone, the call centre worker. Over the last few months, I've been interviewing call centre workers, asking them for details of their worst calls ever. And the thing is, a worst call ever, that's a special class. Sure, you're always going to get bad calls, but if you take a worst call ever, there's a physical response.
And that's when you start stumbling and you start fumbling and you get shaky.
Every call that dropped in, I just had this, like, fluttering in my stomach.
And leaves a lasting impression.
I don't know how I continue. I don't know how I'm still here 2 years later.
Hang up from a worst call ever, and you're probably going to want to spend some time just staring at the phone, replaying the call in your mind.
You kind of compress your body in on itself. You're just like, it's a very physical thing.
I want to get into the phone, but I want to not touch the phone. If you ask someone who hasn't worked in a call centre what would qualify as a worst call ever, they'll probably tell you it's one where the customer gets really angry.
And they're just constantly ripping into you. They're like, so you're telling me I'm not covered. So you're telling me this.
This is Tasha.
Hi, you're speaking with Tasha. How can I help you today?
Using her best phone voice. And Tasha has some experience with angry calls. She's one of a few people that I spoke to who worked for a health insurance company. And she was telling me about an angry call that she'd had recently.
She was like, what a joke. This is disgusting. Your company is disgusting. How can you do this to people? They just keep digging at you. They take digs at your company. They take digs at the situation. They'll ask you for your opinion. They'll say, look what you've done to me. Do you think this is right? Like personal attacks on you, asking for like comments that you really don't want to get into.
But as rough as all that sounds, a call like that is actually unlikely to make your list of worst calls ever. I mean, maybe if you take a call like that when you're new and underconfident, but pretty quickly, you just learn to shrug that stuff off.
It can be tough on those ones and you've just got to let them go sometimes.
Some people end up finding angry customers funny.
Some of my favourite calls are when people have called up and just yelled. When you can just mute them and be like, you should hear this guy. Like, that's awesome. That makes a day interesting.
Hello, you're speaking with Siobhan. How are you today?
That's Siobhan. She's another health insurance employee. And she told me about one of her favourite angry calls.
One of my favourite calls ever. I said about 3 words the whole time because it's this old guy who called up and he was complaining about the grammar in one of our letters. And it was just, he was fantastic. He was so passionate about this one sentence in a letter. And I'm a grammar nerd myself too. So I was so on board with him. And he just kept on going about the destruction of the English language and, you know, and I think the one thing I said was, no, I absolutely understand. I'm happy to send on your feedback. And he's like, oh, yeah, oh, bloody hell. And he just kept on going. And I just muted the phone and sat there and laughed and laughed and laughed. And people were walking past looking at me like, is she on a call? Because I was just losing it. And I was like, this guy, get a load of this guy.
In the end, it comes down to the reason why the customer is angry. Sometimes they're angry for reasons that are petty and stupid, and that can be pretty irritating. Like for health insurance employee number 3.
Hello, you're speaking with Perrin. How can I help you today?
And Perrin was speaking to a woman who really wanted a gold membership card.
And I said, no, you don't get a gold card. There's no, we don't offer a gold card. We only have the 2 colours. I don't know what you were shown. She argued that she walked into this store and the sales rep had shown her a gold one. She'd received a blue one in the mail and was annoyed. And I stupidly said to her, what's the point? It's going to do the same thing. And that aggravated the beast. She wanted to argue the point. And it was so stupid and trivial. Like, there was people that I'd had a call just prior to that with someone that had had a deceased husband and he just died 6 months ago. I remember it. 6 months ago he died and she didn't want to take his name off things because she liked the fact that she still got mail with his name on it. And she realised, yeah, that no, it's time, I have to do it. My kids have told me I have to do it.
But really, it's not the anger or the pettiness that's got Perrin so vehement about this call. It's the context. Perrin's not really this pissed off about a woman who really wants a gold card. In fact, he probably wouldn't have remembered the call at all if it hadn't been for the woman before her with the husband who'd died. And gold card lady probably isn't even actually angry about the gold card. It's probably something else going on in her life that we know nothing about. When I was speaking to Siobhan about her grammar police call, I said I thought his complaint sounded unreasonable. And she said,
yeah, well, that guy was, he wasn't unreasonable. He had a point and he was determined to make it.
Sure.
And he didn't need me to do anything.
Yeah.
He just needed someone to listen. And I get that.
For me personally, if a customer's calling about something that is trivial, even if they're really, really angry about it, it's not enough to give me that horrible curl up under a desk and die, bad call feeling. To get that feeling, sure, the customer might be angry, but it's worse if they're also right. If I think that a customer has been treated unfairly by the company that I represent, and worse still, if my job is now to convince them that they haven't been treated unfairly, that's a pretty bad call.
Hi, this is Bryony calling from Customer Care. How are you today?
Bryony's with me on this. She used to work in the complaints department for a budget airline. So dealing with overtly angry customers, that was basically her job.
I've literally heard it all before. There is nothing that you can say to me that's going to shock me now.
An angry customer's not going to faze her. But she hated speaking to people who'd missed their flight check-ins.
I refuse to do missed check-ins. If they tried to give me them, I'd palm them straight off.
She thought that if you'd missed a flight through no fault of your own, you should get your money back. Bryony told me a story about one missed check-in inquiry that she wasn't able to palm off.
It was a family who'd missed their flight. They'd written in so I could rush a letter back, but they'd missed their flight and they were taking the kids to the theme parks. And you could tell from the letter that they'd been saving up for months for this trip and they missed their flight. and they just wanted to go on this holiday, and I had to write back and say I'm sorry, and I felt terrible. I got a lot of bad karma from that job, I think.
Her airline's conditions of carriage clearly stated that if you missed your flight, you didn't get a refund. Bryony didn't agree with that, but that's what it was. And it's hard to argue with someone when, at heart, you agree with them.
It's hard. You have to listen to yourself say, you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, according to the conditions of carriage, blah, blah, blah. Whereas in your head you're going, expletive, the conditions of carriage, this is rubbish. And it's exhausting when you have to say no to people all day.
Mm.
Like, physically it's just draining when you just have to say conditions of carriage, conditions of carriage, terms and conditions, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
Especially when you don't agree with those specific terms and conditions in the first place.
If you're wondering why Bryony feels so strongly about missed check-ins, it's because...
Because I've actually in the past missed flights with this particular airline.
Which makes sense. When you have a personal connection with a customer's complaint, it's easy to put yourself in their shoes and to feel terrible when you have to refuse them. Like Perrin, who spoke to a customer.
They wanted to know about end-of-life care at home. And I can't remember the exact details, but we couldn't help them. Like, it just, it didn't fit the parameters of what that was. And this bird was bawling her eyes out, and there was nothing we could do. And it was stressing me out at the time, because personal circumstances, and I was like, you got off it, and you're just like, I don't cry often, but you felt like just going and curling up in a ball and giving it all away.
Dealing with people's health can naturally lead to some pretty bad calls. But having a personal connection with the circumstances of a customer can be unsettling no matter what your industry. Right at the other end of the scale, there's Lindsay.
Hi, good evening. My name's Lindsay. We're just calling about a short customer service survey.
Lindsay works for an outbound call centre, and that means that she's calling people, asking them to participate in various surveys. Sometimes she's wanting to get their opinion of their bank or to know how they're going to vote in the next election. People hate these kind of outbound calls, so you'd think that Lindsay would have had her share of angry people to talk to. But actually, if you're angry with Lindsay, you're just going to hang up. You're not going to stay on the line and get irritated about something ridiculous or spill your guts about your horrific personal circumstances. As a result, Lindsay really doesn't take very many bad calls.
Are there examples of emotionally involving, like, this is a bad call because I'm traumatised now? Have calls? Does that happen?
With the survey, like, the main survey that we do is very, like, robotic, and it's just customer service. So unless somebody has, like, a really difficult time, then it's just very difficult to empathise, because most people just have, like, run-of-the-mill experiences. There's been a few surveys, though, that have been, like, yeah, a bit more personal. This survey that we were doing last year, where it was took, like, 15 to 20 minutes, and, like, it was quite personal, talking about, like, how many kids you've got, what you earn, childcare and stuff like that. And because you're on the phone for so long with them and you had to find it, like, all this personal information about them. And then, like, often they would be, like, in a fairly not a great financial position. And just hearing all these details about their life.
Doing this longer, more complicated survey, there was this one woman in particular that Lindsay spoke to.
So I was talking to this mum, I think it was probably like a Friday night or something, and she was really nice, she was really friendly, and then at the end of the call she was saying that she was watching Friends, or her daughter was watching Friends, and she was like in the kitchen, like sort of half overhearing it, and I love Friends, like it is my favourite show, I'm obsessed with it. So, like, I was getting on, like, really well with her, and she said, like, Mom, I've been talking, just been watching Friends with my daughter. I was like, oh, what episode was it? And it's still very, like, scripted and verbatim and stuff, and you're just asking the questions and they're just filling in the blanks sort of thing. But you sort of do start to get the feeling that they're not
like that they're an actual person on the other end. They're not just like filling in the blanks and you're not just like pressing the button. There's like someone on the other end, like this is their life that they're living.
In some ways, this is the opposite of what I've usually experienced in my call centre jobs. In the kind of call centres I've worked in, there was a huge emphasis on getting to know the customer, on rapport building. And that's because in those jobs, my primary task was to help the customer and to keep them happy. At Lindsay's job, her primary task is to gather information and to remain impartial. At my jobs, asking about the Friends episode in the background would have won me brownie points. At Lindsay's, it sent her into a tailspin. It was enough to make it a candidate for her worst call ever. But really, the difference between my jobs and Lindsay's jobs, they're not opposites. It's just a question of scale of intimacy. If we think of a call as a window into somebody's life, then on the kind of jobs that Lindsay had, the curtains on the window are only open a crack. She gets the barest facts about her customers and she moves on. If she accidentally opens those curtains just a little wider, suddenly those facts form themselves into the image of an actual person with a real life, and that can kind of throw you. The kind of jobs that I worked, I was used to the curtains being set wider. I was used to thinking of the voice on the other end of the line as a person, in so much as they were a person that I wanted to help and to please. I wanted them to think well of me and the company that I represented. But I wasn't thinking about the whole scope of their life. I was just thinking about my little 10-minute window into it. Sometimes, on a really bad call, the customer isn't yelling or swearing or calling you names. Sometimes things get bad only because those curtains get thrown open as far as they go. And you see everything.
Welcome to Health Support. My name's Nick. How can I help you today?
Nick is another health insurance employee, and I asked him to tell me about his worst call ever.
So I had one inquiry, actually, when I was on the phones. It was about a year or so ago, and a guy had chosen coverage that didn't cover pregnancy. So he was from overseas, and we didn't cover it at all. And the problem with that is because he was from overseas, he didn't have access to Medicare either to get it covered, so he'd have to pay it up front. And his wife felt pregnant, and he didn't
have the money to pay for it, is what Nick is saying. I asked him what it was in particular that made this call his worst call ever, and he said,
I think at the time, it was a bit unexpected because he was so happy about having a baby and everything, which made it worse. But the fact that he was so happy and his wife was so happy and they were so excited on the phone, and then I found his cover and I said, oh, you know, we don't actually cover it. Unfortunately, you'll have to pay it. It's all out of pocket. We don't cover any of it. And it sort of was silent. And then he said, like, well, we won't be able to have it then. And I said, wait, what? Like, I didn't really understand at first what he meant. And he said, we can't go back to our home country and we can't afford to have it here. And it was so quiet then, and I just realized what he was saying. He didn't say that he was going to abort it, but that's what he meant. And I, at that point, I was like, oh, gosh. It was such a change in the atmosphere on the call. Yeah, that's probably why it was so unexpected, why it was probably my worst call.
Maybe it's an obvious point, but most people go into customer service because they like helping people. And on a day when all you're doing is saying no, terms and conditions, conditions of carriage, fund rules, no, 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 all day long, it's really hard to feel like you're helping. You start to feel helpless.
Hi, this is Emma. How are you going today?
Emma told me a story, which is probably the worst case scenario for a worst call ever.
And here's what I want to stress. It wasn't just Emma who told me a story like this. This was a situation that multiple people I spoke to had been in.
Because she was saying how she's suicidal and she's going to, like, kill herself, and I could not help her. And I was like, wait, thinking of, you know, Lifeline and stuff, and I, like, couldn't think of the number because I was just caught way off guard. And, you know, she was putting pressure on me because she's, you know, feeling she needs help. But that call ended, and it just did not end well.
For the record, the number for Lifeline is 13 11 14. And if you or someone you know is having suicidal thoughts, you should contact them or your local crisis support centre. Emma couldn't think of that number off the top of her head because she hadn't been trained to take this kind of call. It wasn't supposed to be part of her job. None of the people that I spoke to who'd talked to someone who was suicidal at work had been trained to have that kind of conversation. None of them worked for a suicide prevention line or emergency services or 000. So when they got those calls, they did the best they could, and then the customer hung up, and then what? What do they do then? Make a cup of tea? Working in a call centre is tough. There's no denying that.
In the last 14 months, I've completely lost faith in the human race. we are stuffed.
Wow. You're like, that's it. I'm leaving. I quit. I'm out of here.
But it is important to have some perspective. At worst, when you're in a call centre, you're dealing with reflected trauma. And even then, not every call is traumatic. Not every customer is angry or upset or desperate. We don't actually spend all of our time saying no, referring to terms and conditions, dashing people's hopes and dreams. Not every life you get a window into is a tragedy. Sometimes getting a window into a life is a privilege.
Another one of those calls that I still think about is someone who just wanted, she just wanted to chat, and it was all about how she kept having a fall and getting taken in the ambulance to hospital. She was an old lady, but her husband had dementia, and so she was his carer. And she was obviously not well herself, but she was just like, no. She'd get to hospital, she'd be taken to the emergency room, she wouldn't be admitted because they'd try to admit her, and she'd be like, no, I've got to go home, I've got someone to look after. And I was like, well, hey, you need to look after yourself. And she was the most amazing lady. I still think, I wish I'd held on to her membership number so I could just give her a weekly check-in call and send her flowers every now and then. You know, you could tell she was a woman who liked to be surrounded by beautiful things, but, you know, there was no one to buy her flowers anymore. And she was giving up everything for this, you know, husband who didn't even know who she was. She talked about how she would talk to him. She was like, oh, he's never listening. Or if he is, he doesn't remember. But it's still nice to have someone to talk to.
Let's face it, if you're calling a call centre, it's very unlikely that you're happy. You have to make the time, find the number, you select option 1, option 5, option 3, option 3 again, you're on hold. You have a problem. You need something. And these days, chances are what you need is not simple. If you had a simple problem, you'd solve it online. You wouldn't be calling. You're calling because you need to speak to a person. You need to interact with a living person and make a connection, even if it's over something mundane. And a personal connection, that's not nothing, even on a worse call level.
That story was from Melbourne producer May Jasper, with help from supervising producer Beck Fari and editing support from Brittany Jesuit. May would also like to thank all the call centre workers who took part in this story, with special thanks to Bron, Rebecca, Daniel and Benjamin for their contribution. If you like May's work, look out for her new podcast, Random Article, which will be launching in August 2016. Like all the best? Think you could have a crack at making a piece for us? Well, we're always looking for interesting Australian stories from up-and-coming radio makers. No matter what your skill level is, we'd love to hear from you. We have offices in Sydney at FBO Radio and in Melbourne at 3RRR and SYN, but we also accept submissions from anywhere in Australia, and we can give you editorial support during the process. To get involved, email our executive producer, Selena Shannon. Her address is ep@allthebestradio.com. Or you can message us on Facebook if you want to make a story. All the Best is broadcast from FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. Our executive producer is Selena Shannon. Tegan Nichols compiles our show. Our community coordinator is Aidan Mullins. My co-host is Michael Bryden. And I'm Pitt Rasmussen. All the Best is played across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can also find our archive at allthebestradio.com. While you're there, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.